Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. My name is Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. And on Wednesdays, we sit down and talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we are joined by our friend Jen on the Wednesday Conversation's third birthday.
Man, time flies, doesn't it? Happy birthday, Chris.
Yeah.
Were you even on the first Wednesday Conversation?
No. I think I jumped in like in April or May. Okay. So I missed.
So
the first
we did a month without you.
Yeah.
Well. You jumped in when it was like gaining popularity. You wanted to. Yeah. You jumped on
ride the
Wednesday
wave.
Bob basically told me, "Hey, I don't know if this is gonna make it.
we need some help on here, bro.
Sinking ship.
Thanks for joining us. And yeah, we're happy to have our friend Jen with us. Different Jen. We've had another friend Jen on the podcast before. Different friend Jen who's joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Jen is a listener who also is a part of our church and sent us a really interesting question in light of some of the things going on in the broader culture. Jen had reached out and said, hey, could you guys talk about how the gospel should shape how we think about forgiveness and healing when it comes to issues of sexual assault? This was sort of driven by obviously a lot of the things that are going on more broadly in the last 3 or 4 months with kind of hashtag Me Too and a lot of the things that have come out in both the world of Hollywood and in the church related to various experiences of sexual misconduct, sexual assault, and the like. And so in that email, I responded and said, Jen, what if you just came on and joined the conversation for that? And here she is. She said, great. So sometimes when you send us questions, we just say, great question. Why don't you come on the podcast and we'll talk about it?
Not the response I was expecting.
But the reason I asked that, Jen, was because you had narrated that that was a particular part of your story and that you had sort of had to walk through the very question you were asking, what the gospel looks like, you know, in helping to process forgiveness and healing. And so it seemed like a helpful thing to say, would you come on and talk about your own story? And so that's what we invited you to do. I'm really thankful that you had the courage and grace to do that. And so just wanted to invite you to sort of maybe narrate your own story. What can you let us into of your own experience with this topic?
Yeah, definitely. So my story has some ugliness in the back. In the back parts of my life, but by God's grace, I have been redeemed and made new, and through His love, I've been given family and friends that can help me walk through it, and counseling that is both Christian and otherwise, that I can work through the different issues that have happened to me, the sins that have been against me, and it's been really neat. It's been neat to look back, and I can almost look at it like it's clinical now. Mm. So it's not, it's something that happened to me. It's definitely not a part of who I am. So, essentially this part of my story starts about in middle school when my mother was engaged to a man, who had certain affections for my sister and I that were not very well guarded. He didn't hide them very easily. And he would make comments or, you know, rub shoulders or different things, make suggestions. And he suggested that I should be a model. And so, well, let me take pictures. Well, he was kind of testing the waters and figuring out what I would allow. And so it went from, you know, me in a swimsuit to, well, that would be a better picture. Well, let's maybe try without your shirt on, just your back. You know, we don't want to do impropriety or anything. And so it was at that point I've kind of realized. And I look back and it was God's great mercy that he never actually acted on it. But at that point, I used to sleep with a knife under my pillow because you hear those stories in the news about stepdads or uncles or whoever, and it scares you. And so I thought, well, that's not going to be me. And that took me on a road that led to some not great decisions when I got into high school. And then I had a boyfriend, and we were sexually active. And there was a night at a party, and he did not hear the word no, wouldn't take no. And yeah, it was kind of awful. I never told anybody. I never went to the police. I didn't even tell friends at the time, because even then it was that question of, is this what I think it is? Or, you know, it wasn't like how you see it in the movies. So you don't really know what to do with it. At that time, I wasn't a Christian, and I didn't have that kind of support around me. So that didn't come until later in life.
What did you do to sort of process that moment apart, not having Christ, not having a gospel framework? Did you sort of try to move on from that? Did you, what did you sort of do in the immediate right now of living through that?
I wish I could say that I went to a friend or I handled it in some way that is mature, but I abused alcohol and drugs. That's mm-hmm. when that lifestyle started for me.
And that was sort of an attempt
numbing.
To medicate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did it take for you, now that you're saying, okay, so I've been through some counseling and mm-hmm. I can sort of, I feel the ability to even look at that clinically.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us the story of what did it take for you to be able to go back to that, process that, you know, both what did the Lord do in your life mm-hmm. and then also just what more broadly did it take for you to enter into healing?
I think tangibly just being heard, having people talk to me about it, talking through it a lot.
When's the first time you remember talking to someone about it?
There was a time later in high school that I spoke to friends about it, but never an adult, never anybody that could have done something or would have actually provided any kind of actual support. Yeah, it wasn't until my adulthood, about college, that I started going to counseling and talking through it, and just being given wise words of not Christian counseling. So it was great. You know, counseling's amazing, but you know, still not being saved, there was still that part of me that was like, that was part of my identity for a very long time. And I lived that way. I lived, even when I started the process of figuring out who I was in Christ, it still was like that little thing in the back of my head of, well, you went through this, and this is who you are, and this is how you're supposed to experience love. This is something that you have to do to connect with people, which obviously is a lie. But later down the road, I remember when my husband and I were talking about engagement, I kind of let loose and said, hey, here are all the things. Here's all the baggage. You know, at this point, I had had a child. I was in my junior year of high school when I had my kid, my first one. And I was like, this is everything. Are you sure? Because you don't have this much baggage. This is a ton. And having him just say, yeah, absolutely, let's do this. Like that unconditional love, that was probably the starting point of truly understanding Christ's love for me. Because before then, I always felt like I had to give something to receive that love.
Even toward God?
Even toward God. And so I was so thankful that, you know, I remember sitting in his truck in our church parking lot that night, and just laying it all out there and saying, hey, these are all the things that I'm probably going to ruin our lives with. All the reasons why I'm not a good fit to be your wife. And him saying, no, I think we're good. And from that, having people come alongside me and show me that my identity isn't the sum total of all of the ugly parts of my past. That my identity can be made new, and what that looks like, and walking me through that process.
So let me call time out and just ask you to speak, Jen, because I'm imagining there's listeners to this podcast who have an experience like yours in their past, rape or sexual assault, and they haven't yet begun to process that. And mm-hmm. so what would you say to them just to give them the courage and the the grace to step into, whether it's counseling or letting someone into that story in a way that can start to move in a direction of healing.
I think for me, it was really important just to kind of face the beast and say, this is what happened to me, and call it what it was. For so long, even the boyfriend would go back and forth between apologizing and telling me, well, no, you just were giving me a hard time. And so I even was questioning myself. And it wasn't until I grew older and more mature that I realized, no, that I was correct in that being not what I wanted. Mm-hmm. So being able to call it what it is and naming it, and then however you need to get it out, whether it's writing a letter or talking to someone, getting it out is huge. And you want to be careful who you get it out to. You don't want to talk to anybody that will listen. When you first start to, you want to do that. There's like this freeing feeling of, oh, I can finally talk about this. So let's open the floodgates. And anybody who will listen, like, get it out of me, you know, so it's not in there anymore. But you have to be careful. But finding that person that you can say, hey, this happened to me, even if they don't have answers, that is a huge step in going forward.
Thank you. Can you talk more about when you first stepped into counseling, mm-hmm. before you were a Christian? Sounds like they gave you some helpful tools and a helpful framework, mm-hmm. for making sense of things. And then it sounds like sort of the gospel, and especially your husband's gracious love towards you that sort of modeled the love of Christ, brought another layer to that and sort of that identity piece. Could you talk a little more about what did the counselors add in the beginning, and what was helpful, I guess, mm-hmm. in just going to counseling, and then what did the gospel add on top of that also was even more deeply healing?
I think the counseling piece was beneficial for education, and helping me to understand that it wasn't my fault, that my body is my own, and that I have say over what happens to it. And understanding, culture, even now with the It's Me movement, there are so many questions like, well, was it really? Well, what was she wearing? Well, what was she doing that maybe caused this to happen? So there are questions over whether or not something is what it is, and even just people arguing over whether or not we should actually call it rape. Well, that's hard. So even however many years ago, that was still a conversation that was being had. So being able to recognize that it was not my fault, and even if I had been sexually active with this person beforehand, no still means no, was huge, because that was one of the biggest things. Well, you had said yes before, so why is it no now? All these different questions that I had. Well, no, if you say no, then it's no. Mm-hmm. And then being able to actually go through and understand that in order to live a full life, this doesn't have to be the lens which through I see it. So even without the Christian perspective, seeing that I don't have to base relationships, my marriage, interactions with other men on these types of things.
What did it look like for you to base that on that? Or, when you're describing, I don't have to base my relationships with people on that, can you give a little more color to that? What does that feel like and look like inside you?
Honestly, without Christ, it was extremely difficult. It was extremely difficult because then I would rely on the numbing effects of going out and partying and going out and drinking and numbing with drugs and the different things that I felt I needed to do in order to not view my world through that. But once I found Christ, once I started walking with him and people were walking with me through this and going, helping me to find my identity in him, then I was able to see through his lens instead of whatever lens I was creating for myself. And it made much more sense.
Can you talk a little bit, Jen, about the complexity of forgiveness and justice, right? Because it's like some of what you're saying, like it's just to say, nope, this is my body, mm-hmm. and I get to, like, we need to call right, right, and wrong, wrong. What does it mean to work through the issues of right, wrong, good, bad, just, and then at the same time to try to get to a place of whatever forgiveness looks like? And that, I even want to ask that question of what does forgiveness look like in this area? Because I think that's one of the questions that is really complex.
Mm. I know for myself, it's easy to look back and say, here are all the things that I should have done. Like he should have been legally held responsible.
Yeah.
And my mother's fiance, he also should have been legally responsible for what he did. And I know I've heard the argument that by not reporting it, I was potentially causing somebody else to be at risk. But I think it's important to also realize that in the moment when somebody's going through something like that, you might not act rationally. It's so much easier to look back and say, I would do this. I can think back even now on my own situation and say, oh my gosh, I totally would have done this and this and this differently had I known better, had I thought more thoroughly through the situation. But again, it's the lens of what I think. I mean, there was a part of me for a long time that was, I wish the worst for you. Justice would be you losing body parts, and sorry, you earned that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a brother, an older brother, that we purposefully did not tell because we weren't entirely sure what he would do. And there were times where we thought about, but I was more worried about him going to jail than the justice that I was seeking. But those types of reactions are very normal and human and should be expected in these kinds of situations. But again, looking through it through a Christ lens.
Yeah, but I think what you just said is really important even for Christians, right? Because I think Christians can feel guilty about feeling those really deep longings for vengeance, retribution, justice. Mm-hmm. But you have to allow yourself to feel that when you experience deep wrong. That doesn't mean that it's okay to still feel that 10 years in the future, right? Like, we're hoping that the gospel does bring some clarity and some healing to that. But I think it, you know, regardless of where people are at in their own story as they're processing something like this, I appreciate you saying you kind of have to, like, that's a normal part of going through something like this, is those really intense longings of vengeance, retribution, whatever you want to call it.
I mean, even if there weren't laws or whatever, like, God puts it in our heart, like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Like, this is righteous anger. You should not treat people that way. And it's healthy and good to be angry about those things. Yeah. But it's the not sinning in that anger is where it gets a little murky.
What has it looked like as a Christian, comprehending and understanding the gospel? How has that been helpful to you in, or not even helpful, but just how have you processed those events? You know, what is the gospel brought to bear for you personally that has helped you to where you can say, I can actually talk about this with a microphone in front of my face now, and it's not scary or embarrassing?
I am made new. I am redeemed in Him. Knowing that it was a sin that was against me, and that, you know, Isaiah says that he was pierced for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. And I love it because I did a little research on the word iniquities a while back, and it talks about gross unfairness. And to realize that Christ went to the cross for the gross unfairness that was done to me. Like, not just the gross unfairness that I do in my life that I willingly, you know, do, but for the things that happened to me, Christ took that on too. And understanding that he gets it. He understands how it feels to be humiliated and exposed and betrayed and hurt. I don't love a God that is removed from this. He totally understands. So it gives me freedom to be able to trust what he says about forgiving these men that have hurt me, because he knows. And even while he was in that position of such vulnerability, he did the same.
So Jen, you speak very beautifully about how you had community around you, people around you that were caring for you and have helped you process through that. And just speaking from like the perspective of the church, that has not always been the case for some people that have walked through an experience that you've experienced. What would you say to someone who maybe is sort of in a place where they're distrusting the church or distrusting because of the church, maybe Jesus or the message of the gospel? How would you try to encourage them to say, actually, no, something beautiful's there. It might be hard to see. Just kind of try to nudge them to that deeper healing that only Christ can bring.
I don't know that I necessarily have something to say to the untrusting person. I have something to say to the church.
Yeah.
Preach
that.
Preach that sermon.
If we know that there is somebody who is struggling with this, whether or not they're a church member, whether it's a coworker or somebody that we go to school with or whatever, don't hesitate to share that with them. And don't just jump the gun and, hey, Christ heals everything. Like, that's not helpful. But hear them. People want to be heard. People want to be seen. People want to know that they're not alone. I mean, 1 in 5 women, and that number is getting smaller. There are so many women walking around struggling with these types of situations, and they want to be heard, and they don't know who to talk to. They just need somebody who's safe. So be that safe person. And then in that relationship, it's just natural to share what Christ has done for us and how it is available to them as well. You know, it might take time and there might be resistance, but I know it wasn't an easy fix for me, even with counseling and people walking with me through it. I still, several years after my husband and I got married and I had been a Christian for a few years and we were doing things, I had to go back to counseling because it doesn't just stop. When you're in a relationship of intimacy with a person and there's that intimacy has been attacked before, I had to go back to Christian counseling and get more help to be able to have that relationship with my husband the way that I wanted to and he wanted to and God wants for us. So just be that person that they can talk to, because I mean, obviously I would say to anybody, like, if you are struggling with this, talk to someone, find someone that is safe. And everybody doesn't need to know your business. Everybody doesn't need to know your story, but it's important to find those people that are safe to talk to that you can. And then if you are that person, believe them. Never start a conversation with, well, at least. Yeah. Well, at least is never.
Yeah.
And never, ever a good way to go.
Yeah.
And just be there for them. And then that will easily give you a segue to sharing how Christ can redeem the situation, and he can.
Mm-hmm. So as you've seen it, maybe through personal experience or maybe things you've just read or heard kind of broadly, what do you think the church misses? Like where are those disconnects? Like what you just described about how to engage someone, and yet we can acknowledge the church often misses. What do you think, what have you heard, what have you seen that's just I mean, you said the at least comment, mm-hmm. and that's a,
yeah, give us what are other
yeah,
things
what are
like
other
that,
things that
that would just be helpful
do,
for
yeah.
people to hear. Don't do this.
I'm going to sound like that person. I'm going to sound like the crazy sex lady, but I feel like sex is a taboo subject in church, and it shouldn't be. It is a yeah. gift from God that is being abused. It's being abused by husbands towards wives. It's being abused by wives towards husbands. It's being abused, you know, in several different ways, and it's not being talked about. So at the very off the gate, we need to be talking about what is God's plan for sex, just in general. Outside of you should wait until you're married, I don't really remember ever being talked to in a church setting about what sex is. And whenever it was talked about, it was in such an intense way of like, you need to wait, that it was scary and, which isn't helpful. And I think that we need to have Paul, Timothy, Titus 2 relationships. And what I mean by that is, you know, every man needs a Paul. He needs a man ahead of him in life that can walk him through seasons that he doesn't know how to deal with. And every man needs a Timothy, that he's doing the same for that person, but can offer new perspective to their life that maybe they'd forgotten, just because when you get out of a season, you forget what that season looks like. And women need Titus 2 relationships. We need women in our lives that are going to help us walk through things that are new and we're excited about, or what that should look like. Mentorship is huge. And yeah, even in with married people, discussing what is okay and what is not okay in their bedroom. And obviously this isn't like a public thing, you know, it needs to be done with discretion, but I think there are so many well-meaning Christian people who don't know how to deal with any part of it. And then it translates into, how do we talk to our kids about sex? Well, if we're not talking about it as the church, then how are we supposed to talk to our kids about it? And so that's it's really, it's dicey.
Do you ever get the sense from people in the church, or have you ever, that you should just get over that happened to you in the past? That, hey, if we believe Christ heals, then at some point you should just be over it and not really want to talk about it, or just put it in the past, bury it in the past?
I think that that's not exclusively the church, but
sure,
yes.
Sure.
And I think it just comes from when people don't know what to say, they don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if we're living in gospel community with one another, if we are living as the church, we should bear one another's burdens. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it, even if it's uncomfortable and awkward and you have to talk about sex.
So with the Me Too movement okay. kind of blowing up right now, I mean, one of the reasons we, you know, you emailed and we're having this conversation is, what should the church do with that? I mean, that's obviously, it's a broader cultural thing. And it, I think in some ways, I've seen some Christians and some churches respond with, well, that's Hollywood, about time kind of thing. So almost this coldness, or that you're getting what you deserve, you know, it's a cesspool. But how do you think the church, what are some things that you, as you've reflected on your own experience, kind of how the church has responded to these, and you see this big kind of cultural moment. How have you thought as a Christian about the Me Too movement?
From one perspective, I think that people process differently. So whether that is writing a letter to your attacker, whether that's talking to somebody, whether that's going to counseling, you have the right to process however you want. However, if you are saying that you love Jesus, and this is to the victims, if you're saying that you love Jesus, and as hard as it is to process, your processing cannot include intent to hurt your attacker. It just can't. It's not productive, and it's not that's not a part of what Jesus would have for you. On the flip side, how churches can react, how recognizing that it's happening. And it's not just happening in Hollywood. It's happening to sisters and friends and people in our GCs. It's happening around us, and it's not going to stop. We're on the wrong side of eternity for that. So we need to make it a conversation. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's as simple as opening the doors to being willing to talk about it. Because right now I feel like there's a lot of uncomfortableness that closes people off to even wanting to deal with it. So we don't. And we might respond, you know, on social media, or we might respond even from the pulpit and, you know, blanket statements that are fine. But they don't get to the root of the issue, and they don't get to the heart of the person. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to heal anybody. You're not going to help anybody by making blanket statements and saying, I support, you know, people who have gone through this, and I hope the best for them. Well, that's great. But you need to get down in the mud with us, and you need to help us get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There seems to be the mistake of just kind of broadly kind of hat tipping. Yeah, we're empathetic, or make the mistake of that's happening over there with those people, mm-hmm. rather than looking like our own homes, our own churches, and then having the courage to say, hey, it's happening and we need to get in the mud and deal with it, and not just sort of shoot over the top mm-hmm. with broad statements. That's really good.
I know some churches have redemption groups that either focus on this specifically, or they just focus on anything that you're dealing with in your past. Mm-hmm. I've seen that, and like those types of things can be helpful. And even knowing that those things are available at least shows that you are open to the conversation, and you are potentially a safe person to listen.
How did you get to the place where you were able to not to sort of see those vindictive feelings toward the men who had violated you sort of, I don't know if melt away is the right word, but you know, because you just said, hey, if you're a Christian, it's not okay for you to desire hurt mm-hmm. for the people who have victimized you. And yet at the same time, you're going through part of that, right? So how did you experience the gospel? I guess what I'm asking is, what is an appropriate demeanor toward your attacker, right? Once
I think that I know for me that space is important. I can forgive you, but
that doesn't mean we have to have any kind of interaction.
Correct. Not just interaction. I don't want to see you.
Yeah.
I don't need that stumbling block. I don't need Satan to give Satan any reason to try to tighten that noose that he thinks he has. I think that, again, you are absolutely allowed to be angry and feel all of the hurt and betrayal and all of those feelings. And it's okay to not want to, if you need to remove yourself. And I mean, I guess it's hard, because if that person is in a position of authority where they could potentially attack again, or those types of things, it's not vindictive to say, I need to tell someone, I need to make absolutely. Sure that you are no longer in a position where you can do this.
Yeah.
But if you are just doing things to purposefully hurt them, then that's not okay.
Well, I was particularly interested in I think there's a simplistic vision of forgiveness in some mm-hmm. Christian circles that sort of like forgiveness means it's all water under the bridge and everything should be fine now, sort of going back to what you were saying a minute ago, Chris, versus forgiveness is something different than I can forgive without reconciliation,
mm-hmm.
right? I can forgive and sort of also cut off any social interaction, right? Like forgiveness, especially in a sin like this, necessarily requires distance. And I think it's helpful for Christians to understand that. And you were reading some book on forgiveness recently.
Yeah, I preached sort of on forgiveness a few weeks ago.
Okay, well, then just preach your sermon now so I can stop. one of the
things that's, that the book's called Unpacking Forgiveness, a very good book, that he makes very clear and shows in Scripture that forgiveness does not eliminate all consequences, that mm-hmm. that there are very real consequences that we should be okay, not just okay with, but honor, because it shows that we also care about justice and righteousness mm-hmm. and the effect that sin has on relationships. And so this sort of naive, hey, you know, you're forgiven, and so we're going to just pretend that nothing happened, that actually opens a door for manipulation and some further damage and further hurt. You know, there's always complexities to different situations, and depending on if the person's truly repentant, there's still consequences. That doesn't eliminate that. So, you know, this is probably another area where I would say, you know, as the church, we don't do a good job of honoring the tension of this side of eternity. I love the way you put that, mm-hmm. We just want to resolve all tension. And so we either forgive the person or we don't. And there's no space of what's it look like for me to have actually forgiven the person, but then also say, hey, this side of eternity, there's consequences, and that relationship will, you know, if they're, you know, hopefully they become a believer, and in eternity, God will finish reconciliation there. But this side, we're waiting, and it hurts, and it's messy.
And the consequences apply to the victim as well. Like, when it comes to forgiveness, I truly have forgiven the people that have hurt me. However, years later, when I'm struggling to connect with my husband on an intimate level because there's something stopping me that is not my fault and not his fault. He doesn't deserve this. That forgiveness process happens all over again.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. Yeah.
Because now you're messing with my marriage. And I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. And that's, I think that, so you're speaking so much to, I think, where the church struggles with this, because once you start going down into that road with people, and let's say I'm in your community and you share with me, hey, I'm struggling connecting with my husband and here's why. I know for a lot of folks, it's like, I don't know what to do with that. And then they just, it can trigger just a lot of uncertainty and fear that,
that's when they call you, cause you're the pastor, Chris.
Yeah.
Or they,
well, right. And it,
which so, isn't a bad call.
Right. Right.
I mean, sometimes you got to reach out to people who have, you know, counselors or pastors or mentors.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's helpful to hear you say as instruction to the church and people who are in community with others that, hey, this is an ongoing thing, and be ready for that. And be ready to enter in that space, not just right now, but if it pops its head up again 5 years from now, or, you know, 6 months from now, and that is part of walking and bearing each other's burdens mm-hmm. through this life. And that's, again, I think that's where I think I have a burden for the church as I was wrestling through forgiveness and consequences and these kinds of things, that, hey, this is ongoing and it's messy, and we need Jesus every step of the way, because it just, we can't just snap our fingers this side of eternity.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we sort of get ready to wrap it up, Jen, what else would you say? What would you want someone listening to this podcast? I'm thinking specifically of a person who has a story like yours and is trying to figure out, what does it mean to process healing? What does it mean for the gospel to continue to free me? And for folks in the church community that are trying to figure out, how do we do better here? Because I agree with you, Chris, man, like the whole Me Too thing, though, what I think it has had some idiosyncrasies to it in some ways that are uncomfortable because the gospel hasn't been very present sometimes in sort of the cultural expression of it. And I'm so thankful for it because I just feel like, gosh, it's got to be freeing for a lot of women to be able to say like, hey, it's okay to talk about. Yeah. And so that's a huge, huge step for the world, for our culture, and hopefully for the church. But I'm just curious, Jen, you know, for those trying to walk with people through this, what else would you say that you haven't said, if there is anything?
You know, I'm not sure. I think the Me Too movement, like you said, is a cultural permission for women that have been through these things to talk. You can talk about it. You are not alone. But we, and myself included as the church, we just need to be prepared to listen. We need to be prepared because you can't always tell who's gone through something like this. You can't look at somebody and see, oh, I can see that, you know, this has happened to you in your past. Some people wear that mask very well. And so just being prepared for someone, maybe nobody will ever come to you and say, hey, this has happened to me and I need to deal with it and I haven't dealt with it. And I can't look back on it clinically and look at it like, okay, this is something that happened to me. It's not who I am. But they say, this is still a part of my reality. This maybe is happening to me right now. That may never happen, but if it does, just be mindful of where your boundaries are. What can you help with? What can't you help with? You know, when I was having issues with my husband, I did go to a sister in Christ, and she said, you need to go to a counselor. Mm-hmm. Let's help you find one. Because that's outside of my realm of knowledge. So yeah, just being ready and being willing to, even if it's hard and scary and you don't feel like you have the answers. Sometimes you don't need to have the answers. You just need to be willing to take it on with them.
Jen, you're a amazing, courageous person. I'm just really honored that you would share your story. In a format like this where people can listen to it. I think it takes a lot of courage. I'm thankful for the healing that the Lord has brought. And I'm just thankful for, I guess I would say it this way, like for somebody going first, because I think I'm hopeful that there'll be women listening to this podcast who are empowered through this to say, okay, I got some things I need to talk about. So thanks for going first.
And if there are, email Pastor Bob and he will give you my email.
Yeah.
I'm ready to listen.
Thanks for that. And yeah, I was actually going to say, as you email, you can email me directly. You can email podcast@cedomaha.com if you want to, or Bethany, our producer, is sitting in here. And if you're a woman and you'd just like to sort of have a woman sort of steward your story, you can email her directly. You can find her address on the Cormdale website, and she can connect you with Jen as well. So if that's an easier and more comfortable path, I want to invite you to take that path. And Jen, thanks for helping us as Christians think about this.
Thank you.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we talked about here today might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Like Bob said, shoot us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com or bethany@cdomaha.com. And we invite you to join us next time for another Wednesday conversation.